What do you see when you think of the homeless? Do you picture mental illness, drug abuse, sleeping on streets? Hundreds of families in Clark County, families, don't have homes to call their own. And here we're talking about mothers, fathers, and children. They may be doubled up in homes with friends, sleeping in cars. They may be part of some of those intergenerational households that we have heard about from NPR this morning. The federal government has set a deadline to eliminate family homelessness by 2020. But shelters in Las Vegas routinely have to turn away or split up families seeking a place to help. We're going to tell some stories over the next 40 minutes or so, and we're going to begin with a lady named Renee. She is married, she has three children, and she is with us now to talk about her family's experience with homelessness. Renee, welcome to KNPR. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Take us back to before you and your family became homeless. Describe your life in Las Vegas.
Okay. Well, we've been here for only 4 months. We're originally from Detroit, Michigan. And me and my family, we decided to come out here for better opportunity. We got here March 11th. We moved down here. And my husband, he was looking for jobs. And we moved right on Las Vegas Boulevard in the Rosemont Apartments. No luck finding employment.
What was your husband looking for work in? What field was he hoping to find work in?
Security. Mm-hmm. He was trying anything that he could. Mm-hmm. Fast food, restaurants, anything to get it started. We had March and April paid up already. Mm-hmm. And May came. We didn't have the money for May, so we ended up getting evicted. And after we got evicted, our items were stolen. So we went to a weekly. We had so much money for that. And then mm-hmm. after that, we was like, we don't have any more money, so where are we going to go? Yeah. Luckily, my husband, he came across Family Promise, and that was on my son's birthday, June 18th.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said your son, you've got three children. Tell us about your children. How old are they?
I have a four-year-old. Mm-hmm. That's my daughter. Her name is Larice. My son, he's three. His name is Maurice, after his dad. And my youngest is Lene. She's one. She just turned one May 2nd.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this was, you hadn't been here long, as you say.
No.
So was it something where, in effect, the money ran out?
Yes.
The money that you'd brought here to get set up?
Yes.
How did it affect your children? I mean, your children, as you say, are very, very young. But how did this impact them? Are they cognizant of what's going on?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think they understand. My daughter, she's very bright, the four-year-old. Mm-hmm. She asks me questions. Mm-hmm. Like, Mommy, you know, where's our home? You know, I want to go home, you know, and I don't have nothing to say.
Yeah. How do you explain something like that to a four-year-old?
I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. How has this affected you and your husband?
It's depressing. I always say to myself that I... Mm-hmm. You know, would never want to get back in this predicament ever again. But luckily, it is some nice people out there that really, really want to help us. And
it's got to—I can't imagine the strain. It's got to be just an enormous strain, especially since you've got you've got three young children. You can't really work
because they look up to us.
You know,
to provide and care for them, and you know, we made some mistakes.
And when you say mistakes, was one of the mistakes deciding to leave Detroit, or do you think you did the right thing there?
I think you
needed to go.
Yeah, I needed to go because there was nothing in Detroit for us. We came here to be, you know, successful and, you know, to build. And, you know, and I'm more like I'm on the spiritual side. I know everything is going to work out fine. You know, we just have like little stumbling blocks that we need to get past. And I think it's going to be a good outcome. Hmm.
So eventually, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you found yourself at Family Promise.
Yes.
How did you find that organization?
My husband, he actually found the organization. And they accepted us the same day, which was...
Wow.
Yeah. They said they don't normally do that, but we got in the same day.
Hmm. What did they offer?
bus passes, clothing, lunches. We get there. Shelter. We go to, you know, congregations. We stay there for 7 days and 7 nights, and they have a volunteer driver that takes us there and picks us up in the morning, and we come back for showers, and
So where are you right now? I understand you've had some job interviews.
Yes,
so you're pursuing some work as well as your husband?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I had a interview at the Luxor Casino on Thursday of last week. They emailed me for a drug test that was for Monday, this past Monday. I took that, and I'm just waiting on their response, and we're going to go from there.
We can go from there. Mm-hmm. Now, also joining us, in addition to Renee, is Terry Ruth Lindemann. She is the executive director of Family Promise, which serves homeless families in Southern Nevada. Terry, welcome back to the program. How common is a story like Renee's?
It's very common. And this is a good example of what we like to call in our community situational homeless. We've talked about the state of homelessness being a nation, and within that, the stratus can be chronic, meaning they've had many episodes of homelessness. Or like Renee's family, this is the first time. And we have seen an increase in numbers this year in families such as Renee's that are coming from other cities that were deeply hit by unemployment, Detroit, certain other communities, and they hear that in Las Vegas there's opportunity. And I think, as most of us know in this work, we've heard this for years. Las Vegas is seen as the hub, and if you come here, you can get a job. But then people come here and realize you have to have sheriff's cards and TAM cards, and there's a lot of people competing for jobs here. Plus, there's other people that have heard this mantra. And it's pretty common in our field, because Family Promise, really, we receive a lot of these families that we bridge them from sheltering to housing, and we work with Help of Southern Nevada and other agencies to get them going forward.
Now, Renee was talking about staying, working with some congregations, and you have set up a program where that is part of the sheltering of some of these families.
Right.
Explain how that works.
Well, we are a national program. We operate in 182 cities nationally. Last year, all of the Family Promise Network works across the nation served 53,000 people. But in each city you see a small footprint, and that is by intent. We believe that we have a day center that looks like a home. Her children are there during the day, and they read books and they watch movies.
Yes.
And one of her little girls is like a cabbage patch. She's so cute. I want to take her home. During the evening, we transport them to a congregation, and they provide a great dinner. We train the supervisors, which are shelter monitors. They stay overnight. They get breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We pick them up in the morning. That network of over 36 congregations in this community, which is Jewish, Muslim, Catholic, and Protestant, give this community over $300,000 a year in in-kind services of shelter. That's money that I don't have to go to anyone and ask for help with. Hmm. So those congregations are a huge impact.
Even with those congregations helping, how often do you have to turn families away?
Every single day.
Literally every day.
Every single day. Hmm. And we're constantly, Help Us Southern Nevada is a great partner. That's why I'm glad to see Kelly here today. We're all partnered up in this community better than ever before. And so we work with each other. If we can't receive a family, we will call Help. We'll talk to their case managers, or the families will call. And we all reach our capacity where enough is enough. The tipping point is there, and there's no more room.
Well, Renee was saying she was given help right away. Sounds like she, in some ways, she was lucky.
She hit us on a lucky day when we had one family move out, and our goal is to always fill our spaces. So if family calls, we get them in, we try to receive them, and yet they were very fortunate.
How many families do you have to turn away in maybe a given week?
At least 20 to 25, mm-hmm. 20 to 25. Mm-hmm.
What's the most common story that you hear from these families, how they end up homeless?
Loss of job. Unemployment, can't find a job. They're trying to take care of themselves, but we don't have enough affordable housing in our community. And it is a fact that for a single parent, they can't support themselves on minimum wage. It takes two working parents to not have state aid in order to support yourself. And this economy is so tight and tough that I think so many families are three or four paychecks away from homelessness right now.
What happens when families have to turn to other shelters? Are there many other places beyond Family Promise where they can find shelter together?
Well, the Las Vegas Rescue Mission, Help of Southern Nevada, has some programs, and we do work with Catholic Charities and Shade Tree to reunify split-up families there. We also receive families from Family Court. Some families get into CPS issues because they've been observed on the street. We try to work with them to get that family together, and we just sort of really work with each other to do it together. We don't want any family to not have a solution.
We are talking about the problem of family homelessness in the Las Vegas area. The federal government has set a goal to end it by 2020, but there is a lack of shelter space, not just in Southern Nevada, but across the country for families. We are talking with Terry Ruth Lindemann, who's the executive director of Family Promise, and Renee, who has experienced homelessness with her family. In just a few minutes, we will talk with Kelly Robeson, who chief social services officer for Help of Southern Nevada. And right now we are joined by Tim Birch. He is the director of social services for Clark County. Tim, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. There are some transitions happening at the county level. Walk us through, if you would, how the services are changing for homeless families and individuals.
Absolutely. As it was mentioned earlier, we do a very good job of partnering up in this community, and we really try to build a no-wrong-door model in our community, meaning that if a family were to come to any agency, we've all got strong enough ties where we could refer into the right agency. However, as this problem continues to grow in our community, as our community grows, we found that following HUD guidance, we've begun to examine what we call centralized assessment and housing placement to try to make the best use of our resources. So the community has gone through a year-long planning process by which we've started to identify some pilot sites to start doing centralized intake. The Veterans Administration has been doing a great job around veteran supportive housing for the last 2 years. The Department of Social Service is beginning to pilot centralized assessment for childless individuals, and then we'll move into our families and our unaccompanied youth as we get these systems built stronger and stronger.
Now, we know that there are not enough beds for all of the homeless families here in the Las Vegas Valley. How much, to what degree, does demand exceed supply?
Great question. Well, we know that at any one given point in time, there's over 9,400 homeless individuals on the street. That, inside that overall number is about 355 homeless households that have children. And if you look at the school district, where they define homeless a little differently, if someone's living in a weekly or doubled, tripled up in a household, there's over 8,000 homeless children in Clark County as a region. That far outweighs all of our available housing practically for the whole homeless population. So we are glad the federal government has increased funding for veterans, and we've made huge strides in housing veterans. But we are hopeful that now that we've come out of sequestration, they will dedicate the same type of funding to homeless families and homeless youth, so we begin to make the same type of strides we've made in the veteran arena with these families who so desperately need it.
Now, also joining us is Kelly Robeson, Social Services Officer with Help of Southern Nevada. Kelly, welcome to the program. How short are we of an adequate number of beds and shelter, places of shelter for the homeless here?
I think Tim got it pretty correct as far as there's much more demand than there is supply. And I think it's just we definitely need the government to put more emphasis and dollars out there for families, for permanent supportive housing, and for the intensive case management that goes with it.
So how often are you turning families away? I mean, how often do you have Terry Ruth Lindemann's experience with Family Promise?
We have probably 50 families on our waiting list right now for our permanent supportive housing, and that number grows daily.
Mm-hmm. Tim Birch, this is seemingly contrary to, what everybody would think of as conventional wisdom. The great housing crisis here, the mortgage crisis began about 6 years and more ago. And yet, the last homeless census counted all kinds of homeless people, not just families, and it showed a 28% increase in homelessness from the year before. So the home mortgages and such may be slowly getting better, but homelessness clearly is not. Why are we seeing this increase right now?
Well, when you look over our trend, and it's a volatile number because it's a volatile situation with so many antecedents, so many things go into a family winding up homeless on the street. So it's hard for a single bright line. But when we look over the last 4 to 5 years of history, we've been pretty flat in regard to the numbers of homeless individuals on the streets and shelter. And we've chipped away where we've had special revenue on that. Now, the most fragilely hit inside the economy take longer to recover than do the more mobile and affluent. We saw a 4-year lag after 9/11, and that was a very short time span in which our economy was hit. Much longer has been the economic downturn because of the housing bubble. So we anticipate that this problem is going to take a much longer time to recover from, years perhaps, especially as we just slowly eke back up in the funding chain to get things reestablished to where we were before we started cutting services and staff and all the things that go into making people housed.
So, Tim Birch, what accounts for that kind of a lengthy lag of years and years, as you're describing it?
Yeah, well, part of it is changing priorities at the federal level, because most of this money that we were talking about coming through housing and urban development is federally set. As you know, there was sequestration where priorities were reshuffled, and we are at the mercy of a funding formula that really heavily favors East Coast older communities. So it's a harder road for us to climb. And then locally, what resources we're able to put toward the issue, you know, we can only expand our budgets locally because of taxpayer bills of rights at about 3% a year. So it'll take years for us to recover what we lost due to the economic downturn.
Yeah. Now, I hear what you're saying about the funding, the sources of support and such, but what accounts for the increase in the number of people who are homeless? Why is that happening? Well, Terry Ruth Lindemann, you've got something of an answer for that?
Yes. I mean, I always have to think in simple terms because I am overwhelmed by numbers daily. And when we interview families that need services, just like Renee today, she told us she came from Detroit. We get more people coming to us in the last couple of years that are coming from really depressed regions, Detroit, down in the south, Mississippi. They can't find work there. They are hearing from friends, or they just think Las Vegas is where they can get a job. So they are flooding here. Las Vegas has always been and always will be sort of a hub in the West.
Are they, in effect, are they many of them just passing through, hoping that they will be able to latch on to something here?
We have had some of that. We had a family that we served really well with our permanent supportive housing. They were trying to get to Salt Lake City, and this was where they ended up. They could go no further. So I think people come here maybe as a jumping off point and get stuck because they run out of money, or they come here traditionally because they think we have jobs here. And our unemployment rate is still pretty high.
Yeah. Renee, that brings me to you. With the high unemployment rate in Las Vegas has been so since the beginning of the Great Recession about 7 or 8 years ago. And yet you and your husband decided to come out here because this seemed like a place where there was opportunity.
Yeah, we thought.
Who told you about that? I mean, how did you learn about this place, and why did you decide to come here?
A few friends. My friend back in Michigan, she told me about jobs down here in Las Vegas. So me and my husband were sitting up talking about it, and he was like, do you want to move? I think we could be successful if we move down there. I said, well, you know, I don't mind. Let's go. And when we moved down here, I'm like, oh, man, you telling me you can't find nothing? Nobody wants to interview you. It was just like no hope. And I would get discouraged and I would get upset. And I'm like, I know my kids are looking up to me. I have to feed them. I have to pay bills. We have to clothe ourselves. And it's hard, you know.
When you first started to go through the ringer here, when you were evicted, when you were robbed after that, and as your family first became homeless, was it difficult to access services?
We went to a few organizations, and they wouldn't keep us together as a family. So after that, we ended up going to Family Promise. Mm-hmm. And I like, you know, how they have their setup. Like me and my husband and my kids can still be together. And
so you've got an opportunity to talk to Tim Birch, the director of social services, as somebody who has received these services. What do you think could be done better in this system for somebody in your shoes?
Well, employment. I know it is jobs out here, but if they can just give us the chance, you know, call us back or something. And housing, we really need it, you know. And I see families every day. They're out there on the streets laying down, and I'm like, that could have been me and my kids, my mm-hmm. husband and kids out there laying down on the sidewalk, mm-hmm. just creating more jobs for us and, you know, more housing and bus passes, you know, donating to nonprofit organizations would be fine. That would be wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Have there been conversations with you and your husband where you just are talking to each other and thinking maybe this wasn't the right place to go?
Well, no, I never said that to him.
Yeah,
no.
Never said that.
No, I never said that to him. I said it to myself.
Why haven't you ever said that to him?
Because I didn't want him to get discouraged. You know, he's the man in the house. He leads and I follow. Hmm. So I didn't.
So was this his idea, or was it something the two of you talked over?
We talked it over. Mm-hmm. He brought up the idea, and we talked it over, and then here we are.
Yeah. So, Kelly Robson, what kinds of services do you see needed in the Valley for homeless families? I mean, where are the shortages at this point?
I think part of it is exactly what Renee was saying, mm-hmm. is shelters that are able to keep the family together housed as a unit. Mm-hmm. Our shelters do a great job of trying to accommodate everybody, but there's, you know, Rescue Mission's really the only other shelter who can house a family, but the males are still on one side of the property and the females are on the other. So the family unit is not exactly together. So I think that's definitely something that we need more of, more programs like Family Promise. And we need, again, more permanent supportive housing with that intensive case management piece. A lot of the families coming in need that guidance in order to get everything put back together, all the puzzle pieces put back together so they can go on and be productive members of society.
Help me understand the background. What is the thinking or the reasoning behind keeping families separate when they are separate in shelters like this?
I don't think there's a purpose in it. I think literally these are just the ways that the shelters are made up. And, you know, in order to change that would take a lot of money and resources that we just don't have at this point in time. I don't think when they built the shelters that anybody said, you know what, let's make sure that the families aren't together. But I don't think that space-wise, it was just possible to do the family shelters.
Tim Birch, are there plans for housing for families, for maybe families that are still trying to find work, families that are homeless at this point? What is the county planning to do down the road for families like Renee's?
Families are definitely a special population with the overall homeless population. As Kelly mentioned, you know, our system really was built to deal with the most visible, most chronic homeless individuals over the years as we built our system capacity. Looking forward to the future, we've put priority on our funding request to the federal government for funding streams that will help us keep families together. But in regarding to going out and building new shelters, not only do you have the resource issue, but you have the whole not in my backyard, the NIMBY syndrome. For building facilities that would bring in homeless services into communities. So we prefer to try to do a scattered site housing model where we can get individuals housed into apartments that they could afford once they get jobs, have them have some rental assistance and get leased up in their own name and help getting back on a path of sustainability rather than building constructing a whole homeless shelter system, which actually, once people enter sheltering systems, this is shown it's hard for them to exit. So we really want to get them into the community, into apartments and housing situations as quickly as possible. And we've shifted our focus to a rapid rehousing model so that as people hit the streets, if they're families, we can rapidly rehouse them as quickly as possible. And that's not only a focus of this community specifically, but of the federal government as well.
So how much money would it take to create all of the programs and the housing that you need to serve homeless families here?
Millions. Millions. Quite frankly.
Because is this like $3 million, $50 million, $100 million?
It would be a guess. I mean, we've not actually scoped out that cost analysis, but we do know that it costs around $12,000 a year to house a typical homeless family with some supportive case management services, and you multiply that out over these 1,000 individuals. We could do rough math, but it would be a guesstimation because it's a. I just want to bring us back. The point in time count was a point in time. This problem escalates and is volatile daily and rises and ebbs as you can get from talking to our providers. So.
Hmm. I understand, Tim Birch, that you've got to leave because I know you've got a pretty busy day, but I wanted to say thank you very much for joining us.
I appreciate you having the conversation. Thank you for putting a spotlight on this issue and our wonderful providers that are out there helping as best they can to make a difference in the lives of families such as the one you have on the show today.
Oh, thank you very much, sir. We are talking about family homelessness in Southern Nevada, and not just homelessness, but focusing on the homelessness problems facing many families here. The federal government wants to end family homelessness by 2020. There's a ways to go. We are talking with Renee. She's a wife and a mother. She has three young children with her husband, Maurice. Jerry Ruth Lindemann is executive director of Family Promise. And Kelly Robson is social services officer with Help of Southern Nevada. Terry and Kelly, I want to ask you about, in effect, about the stereotypes. You know, we started the conversation by talking about that a little bit. There are certain stereotypes many of us have of people who are homeless. How are homeless families different from either the stereotype or from, if you will, the chronic homeless, which is what a lot of us think of when we think of homelessness? Terry Ruth?
Well, I'd like to speak towards families such as Renee and Kelly's. Really, their organization does a great job with serving the chronic population. We have always targeted non-chronic, but we do serve chronic. We serve everyone now. But families that come to us have experienced situations where they're treated differently when their children might, you know, act up a little bit. They seem to think the parents can't parent. Well, when I had children, my children acted up all the time. And a good point that Renee made was that the men suffer greatly because in family structure, they are considered to be the one that leads the family, the breadwinner. And it can be very difficult for the families that are married. And they're looked at as non-productive or maybe they have some kind of behavior that caused it, or they could have just gotten a job and this wouldn't have happened. But this happens to everybody, and we should not look down on them, such as we are big and they are small. We are them, and they are us, and they have been our neighbors, and they need to be our neighbors again.
Kelly Robson?
I don't think anybody wakes up ever saying, you know what, I think I'm going to be homeless on the streets of Las Vegas. I think there's lots of myths out there that people just, they do this. It's the drugs and alcohol, and if they'd quit that, it's the mental health. But honestly, it's a lot of situations beyond their control. People don't ask to lose their job. People don't ask to be born with a mental illness. There's some families out there who have been chronically homeless, and just because you're chronically homeless doesn't mean that that you deserve all of those stereotypes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is somebody with a mental illness who just doesn't have those resources and just needs to get back on their medications to get stabilized, to go out and gain employment. Sometimes it's somebody who, due to their mental illness, has abused substances and just needs that help to quit that in order to become another productive member of society.
Now, in addition to organizing Project Homeless Connect every year, the Nevada Homeless Alliance has also added an event called Family Connect. I'm wondering, why do you reach out separately to low-income and homeless families?
Project Homeless Connect has always been for single individuals. It's something that's been going on for years and years in this community, and it's for the homeless individuals living on the streets who need that service. We reached out to families due to it's more of a resource to try to prevent homelessness. So low-income families and people who are about to experience homelessness can come to this one-day event. They can go to all of the different service providers and find out what they offer in order to prevent them from becoming in the situation that Renee and her family were in.
Where are the differences when you say single people who are homeless versus families? I mean, what kinds of different focuses do you have to pay attention to when you're working serving families as opposed to working to serve individual people?
In my experience, when you're serving an individual, that's who you're focusing on. You're focusing on one person. When you're servicing a family, say it's a mom and dad and three children, you're not only just focusing on mom, but you're focusing on dad and whatever issues dad might have. You're focusing on the children, making sure that they're in school, making sure that all of their needs are met. And if there's any mental health or just medical or any type of issues with the child, it's really at that point you're focusing on five people and working a case plan for every single person in that family, rather than just one person as an individual.
So when you're dealing with a family like Renee's, you know, she's got three children under the age of five, you've got to have case plans for those three children as well as for Renee and her husband.
Absolutely. You need to, you know, what are the needs of those children? Are they of school age? Do we need to get them back in school? Do they need medical appointments? What are the needs of those children? Because you can't just look at mom and dad.
Mm-hmm. Are there cases, speaking of stereotypes and such, are there cases you're aware of where families, in effect, think of the stereotype and then do not necessarily identify themselves as homeless, even if they're living, say, out of a car or in a motel?
I think there's a lot of families who are doubled up, who are living in their car and are just too proud at this point to come in and seek services.
It prevents them from accessing the
Yes.
services you offer. Renee, you said you haven't been here for very long, just a few months. You came here in the late winter. It sounds like it didn't take long for you and your husband to acknowledge, you know, we don't have a home right now.
Right.
You know, you got evicted and such. How did you, you've explained a little bit of that, but it must have been horrendously painful.
Yes. I try not to think about it.
Yeah.
It is very, very depressing.
Did the word homeless cross your mind when you looked at your kids and you looked at your husband?
Yeah, and I just like cried right then and there. And my daughter came and asked, "Mommy, what's wrong?" You know, they want to comfort me and it's going to be okay. And, you know, right at that moment when she did that, like I felt so much better, you know, because I didn't think that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know,
did you have to wrestle with maybe the sense of pride? Or the
Yes.
desire to be self-supporting at all times
Yes.
before asking for help?
Yes. I said, you know, I would tell my husband, I said, you know what, don't worry about it. Something else, you know, something's coming. You know, we're not going to be homeless. We're not. And it happened. We had to go to, we went to different organizations. They said that we needed to be there by 2:00, and we didn't go to them. We ended up going to Family Promise, which worked out better. So, and then with this organization, I don't feel homeless. You know, I feel like I'm a part of their family, you know, and I like it.
Jerry Ruth Lindemann, you've said that many families in the Valley are only about 3 paychecks away
Absolutely.
From homelessness. I mean, just kind of close to the cliff. What's the solution to that problem? That problem of not much security for so many of us?
The economy has hit this community very hard, like it has many, but it really hit us all very hard. And you have to learn to save money. You have to learn the difference between I want it and I need it. And a lot of that begins in the school district. I know many classes are out there now that work with students regarding budgeting and learning how to do finances. We need more of that education for our youth. That you don't just spend until you're broke and don't worry about tomorrow. And then we have to have an increase in the minimum wage. Across America, families, individuals cannot support themselves on $8 an hour. If the minimum wage could be raised, that would be a great help and more employment.
Is it really that easy? I mean, I'm not that I'm challenging these ideas, but as you're kind of ticking these things off, and it sort of sounds like, well, these solutions are just kind of there across the table.
No, they're not easy because we're changing a mindset. What we do at Family Promise when a family comes in is try to help them self-identify what didn't work. And historically, it is budgeting and it is failure to save, but maybe they weren't able. So as we're going forward, we're trying to bring those skill sets to our families. We also don't refer to our families as clients. We refer to them as guests. It's part of our national mantra. And our coordinators are hosts. So that already sets them up to feel like they're going to a bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. And I know you treat your clients with respect as well. But we don't like labels. We don't like the word homelessness. In fact, we want to eradicate it, but it is a community need. We need the community to step up and help all of us. We need corporations to put money to this situation through the Committee on Homelessness or the COC. Contact Tim Burch. The most successful communities in our nation, corporations have come to the table with funding. And we have government, but we need the private sector, all of us. So,
the federal government's goal, as I mentioned a couple times in this, the beginning of the conversation, is to end family homelessness by 2020. That's a huge boulder to roll up the hill, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
How are we going to get there? What do we need to do to get there?
Well, we need better community awareness. We need to educate our community through programs like this morning. We need to have housing first. You know, even us that run shelters, we don't think shelters are the solution, but that's the solution for now. We would love to have Renee come to us and within 48 hours place her in an apartment. But that isn't going to happen until there's employment. You can't sustain housing without a job.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So corporations, come to us and tell us you want to hire people that we serve. Recently, I found out that Manpower has entered into an agreement with you and Family Promise, and I think maybe Salvation Army and one other agency to receive referrals from us for employment. That was the best thing that's happened to us all week. Jobs are the golden ticket.
Mm-hmm. Has the amount of time between the first contact from a typical family and time when they find a home to live in, has that time shrunk? Has it expanded? Has it changed in the last few years?
It only shrinks if we can find employment for mm-hmm. that family. We can play. There are a lot of agencies that have programs, but within 3 months, they need to be able to pay for that themselves. It's a very scary situation to place a family like Renee into any kind of housing without a job and hope 3 months from now they're going to be employed. So our goal is hopefully to have them employed on the front end.
Mm-hmm. Terry Ruth Lindemann is the Executive Director of Family Promise. Kelly Robson is Social Services Officer with Help of Southern Nevada. And Renee is the mother of three young children and with her husband Maurice is a guest of Family Promise. Renee, good luck.
Thank you.
Hope things work out.